Welcome to Intelligence Community Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
This guest knows more than he'll ever be able to tell anyone. He spent 30 years at the National Security Agency in a series of technology positions. More recently, he was the Chief Information Security Officer. Chris Kubik joins me now. Mr. Kubik, good to have you on.
Hello there. How are you doing today?
All right. So first of all, what's it like to be able to use your cell phone in the office now?
Well, that does take a little getting used to. I'll tell you what, I still kind of reach down and check my pocket when I'm walking in the door of a building just to, out of habit to make sure that I don't have my cell phone with me. And now I can. So that's great.
Yeah, you could even probably buy a new pair of socks at Amazon during lunch hour and nobody would complain about it. But I wanted to ask you, you know, having cybersecurity responsibility at the NSA, which is, I guess, the crown jewel of cybersecurity, there seems to be two schools of thought on the future here. And I'm going to quote Ron Ross of NIST, who says that we're forever going to have to block and tackle to protect not just the manifest part of the networks up top, but what he calls this huge attack surface below the waterline, versus any possibility of coming up with some sort of a magic bullet that would completely alter the whole approach to computer architecture and we can relax. Do you see that ever happening?
You know, I certainly agree with Ron. I don't think there's any magic silver bullets out there for cybersecurity. I think, it requires a lot of hard work and discipline to secure an environment. Particularly when you're talking about a large enterprise environment, you know, a very complex environment. But I think there are some, you know, sort of some basic strategies that you can apply that just kind of make that hard work of blocking and tackling a little bit easier. And the first of all is you really have to understand the terrain that you're trying to defend. And what I mean by that is you really have to have your environment well instrumented and be able to essentially have centralized collection of metadata from your sensors across the network and be able to map that all out and understand the overall terrain. So, you know, all of the assets that you're trying to secure, how they're connected, how well they're secured as far as patches, updates and those types of things. I think that's key. If you don't understand what it is you're trying to protect, then it's very hard to defend that enterprise environment. The next, which I've already kind of touched on, is the basic blocking and tackling of just keeping your systems up to date and patched. And that can be particularly difficult. And once again, in a complex environment where you have lots of different, systems, different operating systems, et cetera. But it's very important. I mean, time and time again, you see the breaches that have occurred have been because of, patches that have not been applied. Some other things are to really understand what are your high-value assets. What are those things that are most critical to your business operations? Understanding for those high-value assets, once again, how they're connected, how they're protected, how exposed are they up to date and whatnot. But for those high-value assets, it's worthwhile to put a little extra effort into adding some extra security for protecting those high-value assets to ensure that they are secure and you're able to perform those critical, business functions.
Well, let me ask you this. The federal government is really waking up in a big way, especially led by the Defense Department, in securing the supply chain. And the supply chain does hold a lot of federal data and federally related data, some of it sensitive, some of it classified, some of it just simply something you don't want to get out. Now there's the maturity certification model making its way through DOD. At the NSA, what was their basic approach to supply chain? Because the agency does have one.
As a Chief Information Security Officer, I certainly had supply chain risk management in my job jar, so to speak. That's a very difficult area to tackle. I mean, just as products become more and more developed across the globe by multinational companies. Systems have, lots of third-party software, open source software sort of all integrated in with custom software. Same on the hardware side. It's really hard to understand the pedigree of any system you're trying to deploy into your network. So certainly anything you can do to try and give yourself more confidence in the pedigree of that, hardware, software, firmware is a good thing to do. But I think the most important thing to do is really think about where you're deploying your products from an architectural stance, and really try to, particularly if it's a piece of equipment that provides a critical function for you, make sure that it's, well protected within your architecture, and you have things in place to monitor that device pretty closely, just to understand if it starts behaving differently. So I think you kind of have to go at it from an architectural perspective than really trying to understand the pedigree. There are certainly some obvious, things from a supply chain standpoint that we've seen a lot in the press lately. So I think there's some obvious things you want to avoid, but for the general products, I think you really want to take more of an architectural approach to trying to protect yourself from supply chain risks.
Yeah, the law of the land is no 5G products from China, but there's a lot of other products from China that do make their way into federal networks and commercial networks. Do you feel the greater danger is the backdoor infiltration or exfiltration of data or listening, or is it simply the possible loss of technological leadership in important areas that is posed by China? The United States would cede that leadership.
Me being a cybersecurity professional, I'm more concerned about what might be hidden within those products to subvert those products. So I'm more interested from that perspective. So yeah, that's where I really have to try and isolate those things as best you can. Now, if that particular technology is providing the core of your network, then it's pretty hard to isolate that. So the architecture strategy may not be able to help you there.
Chris Kubik, former Chief Information Security Officer at the National Security Agency. We'll have the rest of our interview with him after our first break. I'm Tom Temin.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
We continue with our interview with Chris Kubik, former Chief Information Security Officer at the National Security Agency. In general, you mentioned what you think agencies need to do. How would you rank the federal government, ABCDEF or ABCDF, on its approach to cyber at this point?
I'm not sure that that's a fair question for me, since I'm not in the government anymore. I don't know that I want to comment on that. But I'd say there's the full range of security out there. However, I will say that for me, working in the intelligence community and working primarily with the DoD community, there's a tremendous amount of cooperation, coordination that goes on within those communities to really share information and to really work towards improved security for their networks. And that's important because of the tremendous amount of information that's shared, say, within the intelligence community, to have that trust and confidence across all of the intelligence agency communities that the information that's shared will be protected in a similar fashion and protected sufficiently across the intelligence community. So I can say, at least from the intelligence community perspective, they are really focused in on improving the security of the intelligence community in order to build that trust.
And it's fair to say, I guess, that the civilian parts of the government have really caught up to, say, DOD and the intelligence community in understanding and getting behind the importance of this problem. Maybe it's because of some breaches in recent years, but they seem to be pretty serious about it across the board.
I think there's certainly the awareness now that agencies across the government need to take cybersecurity seriously. You certainly need to have the resources in place to be able to secure your environments, and that really requires support from senior leadership in those federal agencies, and really a commitment from that senior leadership to make the necessary investments in cybersecurity. So I think you're seeing that kind of shift a little bit, and there's a little more priority being put on cybersecurity. So I think that will lead to improvements as we go forward.
And what was it like at the NSA, living through the Harold Martin case? I guess he was sentenced a year or so ago, and the shadow brokers losses.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I really want to comment on that too much, since I don't work at the agency anymore. But you know, it certainly led to significant changes at the agency in how it really thought about cybersecurity, and you know, much more of a focus on insider threat, and much more of a focus on making sure that the systems were, you know, well secured against insider threat. So it was certainly a fundamental change for the agency moving forward. And you know, the people of the nation, you know, put a lot of trust in NSA, and we certainly take that to heart, and so do everything that we can to ensure that the information that we collect and process was secured as best as possible.
Chris Kubik is the former Chief Information Security Officer at the NSA. We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
Artificial intelligence, machine learning, quantum computing. With so many new technologies becoming mainstream, how will they affect cybersecurity? How should intelligence agencies fulfill their missions while enacting lawful policies to prepare for the effects of new technology? At an American Bar Association event held at the U.S. Institute for Peace, Glenn Gerstel, General Counsel for the National Security Agency, discussed what NSA is paying attention to.
So, interestingly enough, for the past, I'm probably going to get this wrong, I would say about at least 5 years, there's been the number one threat that has been announced at a public hearing held essentially every January, sometimes early February, before Congress, where the Director of National Intelligence, the Director of the CIA, the Director of the NSA, and other parts of the intelligence community appear before Congress to have an annual global threat hearing. The number one topic has been cyber. When the asked to rank the threats, the number one topic for the last several years has been cyber, and that's pretty fascinating. The other threats are the ones you'd expect. Yes, of course, North Korea presents great challenges. Russia, China, et cetera, counterterrorism, all the obvious ones that you already know about. But not everyone would have put cyber at the very top. And I think that's absolutely correct.
And this is the intelligence community.
This is the intelligence community's assessment.
NSA,
right. This is the intelligence community's assessment that the number one threat our country faces globally is the threat from cyber, malicious cyber actors. And it's all the malicious cyber actors that you know, ranging from, yes, of course, teenage hackers, but far more importantly, nation states. Unfortunately, the barriers to entry in the area of doing cyber mischief are pretty low, so that's why you can have the proverbial teenage hacker. But at the serious level, when a nation state really pours its resources into trying to do harm to the United States and our allies, the results can be significant. We've certainly seen that with actions by North Korea, Iran, China, and Russia, to name the four that are the most significant malevolent cyber actors. And the damage that's been done has ranged from everything from credit card theft, personal identity information being stolen. In the case of China, arguably the world's greatest transfer of wealth has occurred through cyber means, where China has stolen intellectual property through cyber means and taken it away from U.S. businesses and U.S. Owners of intellectual property. North Korea has introduced malevolent viruses throughout the world through cyber propagation, which have damaged computers. Same thing was true for, as I said, for Iran and Russia, as we also will know, we can spend more time on this, has been particularly active in influence campaigns and trying to influence at least the 2016 election and probably other elections as well.
That's cherry. So I'll hold off on the what's the thing that you really worry about, so we can keep the happy mood
right,
going.
That was, these are all the easy questions, yeah, right?
Yeah, okay, exactly. Fine, but that is a segue to emerging technologies. And could you please explain quantum computing to us in 1 minute or less?
What was the next question?
Yeah. at least one of you understands that joke.
I can't.
How are you at that? Do you want to try that?
Well,
that was not. It was a sort of fake serious question to see if it was taken. Do you want to try quantum computing?
Well, in an extremely general way, obviously, I'm not the technology, but quantum computing is a different type of computing than the kind of digital computing that we now have, based on a completely different system of submolecular movement that enables a vast number of computations to be made at the same time, very, very, very quickly, far outstripping digital computer capacity. To my knowledge, no one's ever built a quantum computer. It exists in theory. People talk about it. You see some literature about it. But the theory, again, I emphasize theory, is that if someone ever builds one of these things, it will have the ability to perform all sorts of incomprehensible data crunching, with the result that it will hopefully enable vast advances in everything from weather forecasting to disease analysis to potentially in the area of national security, perhaps breaking encryption. So the Chinese have announced, this is again all public, they've announced it, they say what their plans are. So their plan for the year 2025 and beyond is to become the number one country in quantum computing. So that's the challenge that's laid out for the rest of the world. They've announced what their plans are, and we'll see whether this ever goes anywhere. But certainly has the potential for both good and evil in the national security sector. You hinted before sort of what keeps me up at night kind of thing, and so let me tackle that because it's the same point, which is this is sort of my personal view. It's not as an official NSA policy on this. This is more my personal view, but being informed by my position. So I'm most worried about the fact that we are facing a completely unprecedented and I would say almost incomprehensible level of change in the technological world, ranging from the things you pointed out, which is artificial intelligence, 5G, which is a completely new form of telecommunications that will be much faster. Like we can talk about that for a second. Who knows, possibly quantum computing. We already have cloud computing. Just the whole onrush of technology, what some have called the fourth digital revolution, is if we're not already in it, we're on the cusp of it, it's already about to wash over us. And I don't think our society has come to grips with this, both in terms of our laws, in terms of what privacy means in this context of this digital revolution where your whereabouts and shopping habits and everything are ubiquitously known. So what does that really mean to privacy? I don't think our societies, broadly, the Western nations, et cetera, and indeed even the global norms, haven't been established in this area. With every other technology that's come along, whether it's railroads, electricity, take your pick, we had a number of decades in which to sort out the basic rules of the road, whether it should be publicly owned, privately owned, how it should be regulated, what the safety features are, whatever. You know, so we now have an electric system that we all understand. We understand the rules of the road. You can't plug anything into it unless it's underwriter lab approved, right? Just as to take one simple example. But we have an internet, and you could plug anything you want into the internet. Indeed, by some estimates, there are going to be over 20 billion devices connected to the internet perhaps next year. The rate and then it's probably growing at about 1.5 billion a year. And just to put that number in context, that means when we wake up tomorrow morning, there are 5 million more devices connected to the internet than today. And when we wake up the next morning, there's another 5 million. And these are Internet of Things devices, your refrigerator, your toaster, God knows what's going to be connected to the internet. What are the privacy implications of that? What would a nation state do if it wanted to do surveillance in that area? What should the rules of the road be? Should we mandate that there be certain base level cybersecurity in this? And how are we going to deal with that? All these questions are yet to be addressed. And yet, in 20 years from now, or even 10, we're going to be dealing with this in a way that we have not yet organized our society to address these, whether it's government institutions, the rules, the norms, the laws, et cetera. So it's coming at us very quickly before we can adapt to it.
What is your position, NSA's position, or anybody's position that you'd like to identify regarding whether NSA Cyber Command should be single-hatted or dual-hatted?
So right now, the director of the agency that I work at, the National Security Agency, is General Paul Nakasone. He's a four-star general, a full general. He also has a second job, which is he is the commander of the United States Cyber Command, which is one of the, I think, 10 other so-called combatant commands of in the United States military, which are joint commands. And that was a recent change in status. So he wears two hats, so to speak. Cybercom is, although I'm going to cartoon it a little bit, this is not the exact way to phrase it, looks more at what laymen have said or others have described as sort of offensive operations. This is the military using cyber to engage with our adversaries overseas and to try to deny or disrupt or deter them from malicious cyber activity aimed at the United States. The same general, General Nakasone is also in charge of the National Security Agency, which does not have that mission. We're much more about, as I said, finding information out about our adversaries as well as providing defense to national security systems, not all of government, just national security systems. So wears twin hats. Each mission informs the other, because obviously if you're good at cracking and hacking into foreign adversaries' computers, if we wanted to, say, break into Al-Qaeda's computers, you'd need to know how to do that, which would be good to know on the offensive side, because we'd like to know, so there's a lot of synergies between the two. Some people have said it's too big a job for one person, it should be chopped up into two. Others have said there's an inherent conflict between the two missions, and it would make more sense if one person headed each. There's been a series of back and forths on that. No decision has been made. My own personal, and I underscore personal, guess is that at some point it would make sense to do this, and that the government will do this. Whether that's imminent or not, my personal view is I doubt, and I think it's something that we need to see the U.S. Cybercom, which is 7 years old, something like that, mature a little more before there's a split. But that's just my pure personal view.
Does General Nakasone have a view, or does he defer to SecDef?
I'm sure he does have a view, but he's basically said that he's provided his military recommendation to the secretary. It is the secretary's decision, obviously with the president's concurrence, but no decision has been made. And as I said, my own personal guess, underscore personal, is that this is probably something that's a few years off, but it's ultimately the secretary's decision.
Glenn Gerstel is general counsel at the National Security Agency, speaking at an American Bar Association event. Find this episode at federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Intelligence Community Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, a part of the Federal News Network.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.